Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink.
I took her out. It was a Friday night. I walk alone to get the feeling right. We started making out and she took off my pants. But then I turned on the TV, and that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And I still more abuse my TV shows. What the hell is ADD? My friends say I should act my age. What's my age again? What's my age again?
A few months back, I was lucky enough to get to go to Seattle and visit Life on Mars, which at the time was a brand spanking new hi-fi bar, as some people like to call it. It's one of those places where you can listen to records and you can also buy records. But on top of that, you can get some great drinks and fantastic cocktails. It's a vegan place, with vegan all the way through. It's owned by one of the guys who books some fantastic live venues in Seattle, a KEXP DJ, and a couple other folks from the music world. And the bar manager is our guest today on the podcast. His name is Craig Ravensky, and he's done some tour managing in his time, some drumming, but he's also made some delicious drinks. So let's sit down in Seattle. And again, when we did this interview, the bar was brand new, but it's been there and people love it. It is Life on Mars in Seattle, and this is Craig.
Introduce yourself.
I will.
Tell the world.
I'm Craig Ravensky. I manage a bar called Life on Mars on Capitol Hill in Seattle.
And is this the first bar that you've... It's not your first bar.
Not my first bar.
You've been doing bar things for a long time.
Been doing bar things on and off since I was 18, living in Alberta. Yeah. That's how, as a touring musician and a touring manager, that's how you make money in between touring.
Yeah, right. It's pretty common. And that's kind of why I started this, was I have so many musician friends. I've worked in music for so long. I worked in radio. We did this. That as time went by, just kind of transitioned over into hospitality in some capacity. But a lot of them are bar owners now or behind the bar.
Yeah.
Do you still make music?
Not as much as I would like to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still there.
It's still there.
It's still there.
I stopped playing music because I found it like caustic to my mental health when I was younger. Mm. So then I started managing, and I just kind of like never went fully back.
But yeah.
Yeah. I'm air drumming all the time.
So were you a drummer?
Basically the same, yeah.
Well, you went from managing bands to managing bars.
Yeah, it's just babysitting in a different way.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's go through your cocktail history. Let's start with that one.
Sure. So when I used to tour, a couple of different bands I was in, there was a couple of different guys who were also like getting really into coffee and beer and spirits, and so I started like researching, and like every city we would go into would be like going to that, whatever the best cocktail bar in that city was. So it was just kind of a world that like I found alluring, and like it was like my passion, but like, you know, music was my thing, and I didn't think I'd ever stop touring. And then 10 years of touring nonstop and deciding to not do that anymore, I was like, well, I already know all this crap, I might as well like go do something with it.
And that was the bartending stuff.
Yeah, that was the bartending stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got a job when I moved out here to Seattle and fell in love and never stopped.
How long have you been here in Seattle?
5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so your bartending gigs, you mentioned, we were talking earlier and you mentioned New York, you also mentioned Alberta.
Yeah.
So what was your first bartending gig?
My first bartending gig was at a venue in Edmonton, Alberta called Avenue Theater that I used to do like sound and lights at. And I mean, I don't count it in my bartending resume because it's like pouring beer out of a kegerator and like
But you
shots.
Have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Everybody does. I mean, most people I talk to, a lot of their starts are like at Chili's or Applebee's yeah. and things like that, you know,
yeah.
Red Robin's.
Yeah, mine was Avenue Theater, and then I worked at Olive Garden.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they had like liquor at Olive Gardens.
Yeah.
Is it not just beer and wine? They actually do mixed
liquor.
Cocktails?
Yeah. Yeah,
so you get
had
a
you know,
shady margarita.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not great, but it's there.
But that teaches you volume stuff, I'm sure.
I mean, I got to eat a lot of breadsticks, so very thankful.
That is like legend.
Yeah.
Legend Olive Garden
I got to
stuff.
Eat a lot of breadsticks and watch a lot of people eat a lot of breadsticks. So.
And so did you go from Alberta to New York? Is that when you
I
wound
went
up
from
there?
Alberta to Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I worked for a nonprofit in Florida, and I toured a couple of bands based in Florida.
Oh.
And then I moved from there to Alberta again, then to spend some time in Toronto, moved to New York.
Oh, my God. Here. So were you working in bars when you were... I guess if you're in bands, you're also kind of working in bars because
yeah,
you can't
B's
make...
Yeah, the two B's go hand in hand.
Yeah,
all
you
the
can't
time.
Make all your money off yeah. of the band. And even like low-level successful bands cannot... pay the rent
yeah,
off of a tour anymore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the music industry is totally different than it used to be, even when
yeah.
I was first starting in it. And, like, they don't make the money that you think
yeah,
you do.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So when you were in Florida, were you working in bars there, too?
I did not work in a bar in Florida.
I have a feeling that might be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I lived in Cocoa, Florida, so east coast. And
that was all just music time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how many bands were you in when you were down there?
I wasn't in any bands when I was
down
there.
Was the nonprofit music related that you
so
were
So the nonprofit was, it's called To Write Love in Her Arms.
I'm sorry?
To Write Love on Her Arms.
To Write Love on Her Arms.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they work with a lot, like, they did Warped Tour and, like, all of those
oh,
things.
Oh, that's
right.
Seem
worked
familiar.
For a long time. They toured with Oh Sleeper and Under Oath and Paramore and that kind
okay,
of like realm of music. And but it's a nonprofit dedicated to making awareness to the issue of suicide, depression,
oh wow,
eating disorders, mm-hmm. self-injury, both to those that are going through that you're not alone, and then to people that think it's a sham that it's not.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's very
trying to break down the stigmas of mental health essentially.
Well, it was and sounds like that was probably catering more towards like younger people.
Totally.
Too.
Yeah.
So that they felt they had someone to talk to.
Yeah. Using music as like the message for it.
May I ask what brought you into that particular nonprofit?
I had heard about them a number of years ago a number of years before I went down there to work for them. That was in 2010. Mm-hmm. Through some bands, mm-hmm. And then my own battles and my own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that time, I had attempted suicide twice.
Oh.
And it resonated with
me.
I've lost a couple of people I knew to suicide. So.
I've lost two people this year to suicide,
yeah.
you know, who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
And
one of my bartender's best friend's dad's just committed suicide like a week
right?
ago.
Right, so it's difficult. I think it's
really
important. I mean, I think there are some times where... something just gets very dark, and I think the person who does it isn't even thinking about,
nope.
I can call someone, I can do this.
Nope.
But it sounds like what you were doing is if you help plant that seed, that maybe in those moments, that seed will germinate just enough for them to make a phone call or walk outside the door to a friend.
Just a constant reminder of there's like someone who cares, and you're not alone. And
You're
like what you're feeling is not your own. Like, it's not just you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, someone else out there understands and someone can, like...
Well, especially in the age bracket that you're talking about, it sounds like this organization probably geared more towards, like, teenagers and 20s.
Yeah.
And that's a really difficult time where everyone knows everything and knows nothing,
exactly.
right? I mean, when we were that age, we knew everything and we
everything.
Knew nothing. And everything sucked and everything was awesome all at the same time. So so it's really... with this nonprofit, were there tours that went... I mean, obviously, you were saying that Warped Tour... Yeah. Did they like have a presence at Warped Tour? Is that what it was? Like, yeah, it was a table there, get bands like, there?
In the nonprofit section of Warped Tour, they'd have their little tent there and selling t-shirts and.
Yeah, just spreading the awareness of it.
Spreading awareness, yeah. And, like, that's totally like. So many people that I know that like grew up going to Warped Tour, like they remember like seeing that flag, and like we were always like right next to like Invisible Children and stuff, and like people will remember that. They're like, oh yeah, you guys were like right there, like next to those guys. I'm like, yeah, totally.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's really cool. So the bands that were involved in this, they're just, I mean, well, Under Oath, I remember in a Christian capacity when they first started. I wasn't sure if the others were like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, Paramore kind
of Paramore
started
part of that too.
Yeah, like that whole like scene of.
Well, there was that in that like mid 2000s. There was that scene of because they weren't Christian rock. They were just
they were a band with Christian
these
people
metal
in
bands
it.
That yeah. had but you know and had that you know projected that as well.
Totally.
So, but it was like in a positive way, not in a you must be Christian or else kind of way.
Yeah.
So I always appreciated that about that. So was it a lot of those kind of bands? Acts that were affiliated with this?
Very much, yeah. When Try Love started, they were under the umbrella of a Christian organization, and over time it kind of just became like, by doing so, it like you're excluding people even without like realizing it. So that and a few other reasons for why they decided to break away from that and like do their own thing. But it was always the idea of there is Christians in our organization, and there always probably will be, but like that's not the forefront. Like,
yeah, I think it's important to show that it's non-denominational.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty universal feeling for someone to feel like crap.
Yeah.
And sometimes to feel more like crap and to struggle with it and to want help or to not realize that it's okay to ask for help. And sometimes it's easier to ask strangers for help than your own friends, you know. That's really amazing. That's amazing you did that. How long were you with that group or with that organization?
I mean, so I worked down there for 6 months, and then I've done things with them on and off since then. Yeah, for a long time.
Well, you're still active in a wellness kind of community, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I'm just by even using the word wellness, I'm aware that you are obviously still working in it. And we are sitting in at Life on Mars, which is a vegan place. But I know there's a community, a very heavy community aspect to this bar as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, the predominant ownership, John and Stephen, Stephen Severner owns Numos down the street, and John Richards from KXP, like, we really want to, like, facilitate a family vibe and, like, capture, like, an essence of, like, old Seattle and community and, like, this, I mean, the idea for this bar and why it, like, came to be was the day that Trump got elected. It was like, okay, we gotta have a space for people to gather and be like, what the fuck is happening? So, I mean, it's, like, bringing people together and, like, I mean, you walk in our doors and we want you to, like, this is home and this is where, like, you belong kind of thing, so.
It is very welcoming, I can say that for sure. And also, this is a bar that has a whole wall of vinyl because it's also a vinyl bar, and
it's
I guess.
It's 6,000, it's not a big number.
Yeah, I mean, I had more than that in my garage at one point, right?
Yeah.
And I think I saw that on Sundays, there's like 2 days a week where people can choose the albums.
So, I mean, every single day, 4 to 7, and then all day on Sunday.
So it's during happy hour, and then all day on Sunday.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about the vibe that creates. Now, for one, that's great. Somebody can live upstairs and come down here and pick a record and play it. So my challenge, owning a bar as well, I'm like, well, what if somebody comes in and it's like, you know, it's 6 o'clock on Wednesday and people are kind of starting to be like, okay, it's hump day. I got to get over hump day, and somebody throws on like Kind of Blue, right?
This literally happened the other day. It was, you know, what day was this? Like, it was Saturday.
It was a Saturday.
Saturday, and someone
Saturday
picked
happy
it. I mean, it's like queue. So when someone picked the album, who knows what the vibe was at the time? But someone put Iron and Wine in the queue.
Oh,
and we're
yeah.
like getting busy, and Iron and Wine starts playing. And I walked out, and I made eye contact with John, who was sitting behind you here, and he's just going, cut it, cut it. And, yeah, like, so I like, play two songs and walk up and just, like, slowly faded it into, like, I don't know, I think it was Interpol or something.
Yeah, right, that. Something that's going to, like, yeah. Because you have to kind of look at that and say, oh, dear, this is going to be a total buzzkill. It's a great record. Obviously, it wouldn't be here if it wasn't a great record. But I was wondering that. I'm like, you know, sometimes folks who haven't been DJs or don't have that sensibility don't recognize that, oh, this is going to make everybody, like, chill
again,
out.
Who knows when they put it in the queue? And
that,
like,
too.
You know,
that
you also,
too.
You don't know what you're putting it next to. You don't know what's going to happen after.
Yeah, totally.
We haven't had a lot of, like, I think we all were very worried about, like, awkward fades.
Yeah.
And, like, like
a bad, segue.
Yeah, like, how did we get from this to this so fast? And there has been awkward ones, but it hasn't been as bad as I think we all thought it would be. Yeah.
So
there's been days it's like gone from like trying to think of a really bad one, but like we went from like Willie Nelson to like Tribe Called Quest the other day, and that felt like awkward at first, but then you're like,
actually that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
It totally makes sense because they're basically both outlaws.
Yeah,
you know, so just look at it that way. Yeah. What's been like what's a wonderful one when somebody's grabbed something there and you're stoked that they've pulled it? You got to have a couple like that.
I love when I get albums that people have brought up that are like people I know, and it's like, oh, like you know that person too. Like it's like, aww. So there's a local singer songwriter Noah Gunderson here in town, and his album's up there, and I think it's only been brought down like twice, and both times I'm like, yes, nailed it.
You don't make me.
I bought like Jay-Z, the Black Album, gets put in there all the time, like every day if it doesn't get put in there. It might not get played every day, but it like shows up every day in the queue. And every time I'm like, oh man, like I get to pick like a different side of this time, you know? Like,
well, what was the decision behind putting in a vinyl selection here? I mean, it feels like it's somebody's den.
John wanted to own a record bar, or John wanted to own a record store, and you just can't make money with a record store. So,
no, that's true. But you do have some records for sale here.
We sell 12 records.
Is it like 12 records a month or something like that? You guys highlight
right now
them?
It's just like 12 records that are for sale. Mm-hmm. There's a small amount of each of them, so when they're gone, it gets replaced with something else.
Yeah.
So things like we have the Nationals' new album up there, and we were only able to secure a small amount of those.
Yeah.
So once they're gone, they're gone,
there'll
and we switch to something else.
Yeah. And you guys, I noticed, have bands, you have bands DJ here, you have guest DJ stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Seattle's a music town. There's a really strong music scene here.
Yeah.
So, and how long has Life on Mars been open now?
This is our 10th week, tomorrow.
I knew it was new, but I didn't know it was that new.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that. I feel very excited to be here on the ground floor.
So
how many artists have you had DJ so far? Just a couple?
DJ, we've had Dude York, local band here in town, and Taco Cat.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love Taco Cat.
Our opening day was with Idols.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And, they did not DJ, but they were here.
They were here,
out.
Yeah.
I actually got to sign a record because someone thought that I was in the band, which was great. It was, I mean, they're all, you know, they're from Scotland, so naturally, if I have red hair, I mean, my family's from Scotland, so there I was walking by, and they were like, some lady was having a while signed record, and she just, like, passed it to me. And I was like, okay, and just signed it. I was telling John the story, and he, like, that's, like, one of his favorite moments from our opening night. It's not that we, like, finally did it. It's, like, Craig signed an album.
That you're an honorary member of Idols as
I,
of
like,
that day.
I, like, didn't say anything, because I was like, if I start talking, she's going to realize I don't have a Scottish accent, and then, like, this all goes to shit.
Yeah,
we have Noah Gunderson has his album release party here next week, and we have a bunch of stuff. I mean, we have like 100 events lined up between now and the end of the year. Some are music, some are like birthdays or other things like that. But
that's cool.
We got a bunch of really cool things in the works, hoping that they work out. But
that's wonderful. So, since you were mistaken for being in a Scottish band, but you have played in bands, what kind of bands were you playing in?
Shitty pop punk and hardcore bands.
Were they really shitty?
I mean, you were 50.
Or have you, like, grown out of it, and that's why you say they're shitty?
No, that's still very much my music. I mean, I listen to everything. I grew up listening to country. That's still my jam. I grew up, like, Alexis on Fire when I was 15 was, like, the best thing I'd ever heard. Under Oath was one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
Like, that's still, like, very much, like...
So what kind of bands... Because then you became a tour manager for a while. So what kind of bands were you managing?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same.
So you're
same
just rock and roll, like,
yeah.
the whole time.
Yeah.
So you have any good tour stories? You got it. You don't have to name names. If they're that good, then you probably shouldn't name names.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely stories. I don't know if I have, like, a favorite. I also, like...
Gotta have one.
Yeah, it happened on the road. Stays on the road.
Stays on the road.
Maybe. I don't know.
But we're not naming names.
We lost the lead singer in a band I toured with once.
For how long?
A couple of hours.
Oh wow.
Yeah, in Toronto, we were all young.
And did you just walk away without him?
No, he was like a long way. He like took off with this girl that he knew, mm-hmm. who was in town, like hadn't seen her in a long time, and just like.
So they had their own
left.
Adventure.
But didn't tell any of us he was leaving. So we're all like trying to find him at this venue in Toronto called Sneaky D's because he was like, he was here. He has to still be here. We didn't hear from him until like 5 in the morning, I think.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. And you're all, okay, well, now we got to be on the road. So you get your ass back over here.
Yeah. Yeah. Hurry up.
He has some time to charge his phone,
hurry
right?
Up.
Well, let's go back to booze then. So. You spent some time in New York, too, and we have some common friends. Actually, one here, Chris Alford from Navy Strength, who also worked at Amore Margo out there. So that makes me think that you probably, like, worked in some nicer bars. Well, I shouldn't say nicer bars. Did you work in divey bars that had nice edges, like Holiday or something like that?
No, when I was in New York, I mean, that was kind of, like, the busiest time of my tour season, so I didn't really even work when I was out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just knew the folks who happened to be out there at the same time.
Yeah, I was at bars. I hung out at bars.
Well, then what is your favorite drink to make when you're behind the bar for people? What's your go-to? Someone says, I don't know, you make me something, and you just ignore the fact that you don't know them at all.
Sure.
And you just make an executive decision. What do you make for them?
I mean, say that there's two different things. I will make a Toronto if they're looking for something stirred, spirit forward.
Make a Toronto?
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know what a Toronto is.
Canadian whiskey, Fernet, sugar, bitters.
Oh, wow.
It's like Canadian old fashioned. It's
yeah.
Or I'm going to just make you a killer daiquiri, probably with some like overproof Jamaican rum.
Daiquiri's my jam, man.
Yeah.
Totally
Can't
my jam.
Go wrong.
You know, I want to go back to the Canadian thing because I'd not heard of that Toronto and it's Canadian whiskey, but I only recently was introduced to the Caesar.
Yeah.
I think because my bar had a Canada Day. Because one of our bartenders is from Canada.
Sweet.
And she's amazing. She's like, let's get some beer. Let's make some Caesars. Let's make some poutine.
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, let's do it. So what am I missing by not having been to Canada? What other Canadian, like, are there some Canadian drinks that I'm...
I mean, outside of just our, like, generic beer is not
generic
water.
Generic beer, yeah.
You know? The Caesar's really, like, the only, like, the one weird, like, why someone decided to put clam juice into a cocktail. I don't know.
But I kind of saw it as, like, a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, it's a Bloody Mary with clam juice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah.
But someone in Canada decided to do that. So, Noah, you've got the Canadian Old Fashioned.
Got the Canadian Old Fashioned. Mm-hmm.
Which is
opinion.
Actually the Toronto.
The Toronto.
Okay. We got.
I don't really know if we have any other like super unique things as far as drinks go.
So, what about the Canadian whiskey up there? I don't know much about Canadian whiskey.
Canadian whiskey.
Do because I used to drink 7 and 7s.
Oh yeah.
You know that was like my go-to when I first started drinking. Yeah. You know, I'd go out and I used to DJ a lot, and they're like, "What do you want? Well, just make me 7-7." 7-7. That's easy. You know.
I mean, Canadian whiskey gets a bad rap. You know, it's like shitty, cheap Canadian whiskey. But Canadian whiskey, like all whiskey right now, is seeing a huge like resurgence.
It really is. So, are there craft Canadian whiskeys
there
now
too? There is craft Canadian whiskey.
Yeah,
there's a couple different single malt distilleries in Canada now. And
tell me about these if you remember them, because I'm pretty well versed on whiskeys. But you're saying this, and I'm like, God, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. You know.
I mean, there's like, Whistlepig is Canadian
is
whiskey.
Shit,
Pendleton
I didn't realize
is
that.
Canadian whiskey.
Oh,
it's just brought down to America and blended. Yeah.
I'm so ashamed that I didn't realize Whistlepig
was
Canadian.
Whistlepig was America's
That's
number
huge.
One rye.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The 10-year is all Canadian whiskey.
I feel like such an asshole.
Yeah.
I seriously did not know that.
Yeah.
I apologize to Canada for not knowing that.
Yeah. I mean, other good ones on like a bigger scale, like Harriman Walker makes Lot 40, which is amazing, a little Canadian rye whiskey. Trying to remember the name of the single malt up in BC. It's like, you can see the can see the label in my mind. It's a black diamond with white writing on it, but the actual name is very much escaping me.
But so do you ever try to like encourage people to drink the Canadian whiskey then?
Not I mean, so much. We don't have Crown, so if someone's asking for Crown, they're getting like Pendleton or Lot 40 instead. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly like a
Try. You have some hometown pride?
A little bit.
Or home country pride, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, the province of Alberta, the distillery that makes the whiskey that goes in Whistle Pig is all grown like in that area.
In that area.
Yeah.
So
that's where all that rye comes from.
So when you're home and you're sipping on something and you're chilling out, you're not here, because that you've only been open 10 weeks, so you're probably here every day anyway.
Every day.
Let's pretend like you have a day off.
Yeah.
And you decide to have a drink.
This is actually my day off right now.
Is it right now? Aw, yay, thanks. Thanks for being here on your day off.
I'm very much a believer in the...
The beer in a shot?
No. In the words of Sasha Petrosky, if you're a cocktail bartender, you should be drinking cocktails. I love Amaro. I love esoteric spirits. That's probably what you're going to find me drinking is some Amaro 50-50 with Singani or some weird Calvados or something like that.
I love Singani. That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that you said that because that's what I always think. But over the last couple of years, whenever I talk to people about this stuff, they're always like, just have a beer. Just go home and have a beer. And I understand that too.
Totally do.
You know, you just want to kind of chill, break down. Every once in a while, I have someone who's like, I make myself a this. I make myself a that. And just sit
there
and
have home and like play with stuff. And like, I feel that like, I don't want to become the shot of the beer guy because I don't want to ever learn. Like, I'm still so excited by what I get to make and do every day that, like, I certainly haven't lost that.
Yeah. So when...
I'll like, wake up, Jen, by, like, shaking cocktails downstairs when I get home at, like, 4 in the morning. She's like, what are you doing?
So your roommate is actually a previous guest on this podcast, Jen Eakin from Rumba. And so you have two, like... top-notch bartenders in one house. Maybe there's more. I don't know.
I mean, our other roommate, his name's Ross. He owns a cocktail catering company here in town called Perfect Pour and also works at Rumba.
Okay.
But he is definitely more of the shot in the beer kind of guy.
Uh-huh. So do you guys, when you're at home, do you guys ever kind of brainstorm together?
Jen actually helped build the menu for this place
for this
with me.
Place?
Yeah.
Oh,
she
that's
had
amazing.
A day off and I was like, all right, I like
you want
your
R&D?
Mouth. Like, come over.
So then, for you, what's been a fun drink for you to create, like, in your history of creating cocktails? You know, because, I mean, you didn't always get to do that. At what point did you get to start doing that? When did you actually have the chops where you're like, let me make this drink?
When I was a bar back at Old Sage before it shut down here in town, I got to make, like, our shift shots every, like, that was, like, my bartender at the time, his name was Joe Sodi, and he'd be like, you make up whatever we get to, like, shoot at the end of the night.
Nice.
Which, there was definitely some bad mistakes made in that time period. And some, like, really good... Like, there was, like, cocktails that started as, like, in-shot form that I created then that, like, I, like, kept on retweaking and, like, have been on my menu. One of them's on my menu here.
Nice!
One's on my menu at Tavern Law when I was there.
That's
awesome! I made, like, a slight variation on it at my time at Barnacle. Yeah.
So that's cool.
It
so you were doing that, and then they start going, you know, your shots for the shift are really great, so maybe you should put some of these on the menu.
Yeah.
To start happening. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what's a favorite that you've come up with over the years?
I mean, one of my favorite is...
I know it's hard to choose your favorite child.
Totally. I'll say there's two that I think are great. I had a cocktail on the menu at Barnacle called For Who the Bell Tolls. That was a Santa Maria Almonte based drink with a little bit of grappa, Vecchio del Capo. It was, like, super bitter, like, in-your-face bitter, but, like, so good. So, like, had this, like,
it almost sounds like a palate cleanser kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something like that. Just rinses everything away.
Yeah.
You know?
The other one, and this one, I came up with the name before I came up with the drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, growing up in Canada, I watched Hockey Night in Canada, and that was, like, twice a week. Like, that's, you're watching Don Cherry and Ron McLean on TV, like... And so I came out, it was like sake night in Canada.
Sake?
Sake.
Oh.
I was like, I'm going to make a cocktail with sake. Sake night in Canada. And that one's been through a few different variations, but it's on my menu here. It has Singani, Pierre Ferrand, dry curacao, grapefruit juice, wine bitters. It's great.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. So when you're home, sipping on your Amaro cocktail, whatever it happens to be that night, what are you listening to when you're chilling out?
Very much dependent on how my night went.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, I'm the I'm the type of person that, like, I love ending my shift working, like, blasting, like, Taking Back Sunday or, like, like heavy metal or, like, anything up there, unless it was, like,
you're going out with
night,
a bang.
In which case, I'm listening to, like, I'm listening to, like, Foy Vance or, like, Frank Turner, maybe, is, like, the heaviest I'll get on, like, the bad nights.
Yeah. That's here. That's if you're in the bar. But what if you're at home?
If I'm at home.
This is like a lazy day at home.
Lazy day at home. It could be anything.
Really?
Yeah.
It's under oath on a lazy day at home.
When I was at Barnacle, Brady, my boss there, will always give me shit because my playlists are like kind of all
everywhere.
Over the place. And he's like.
But that means you're a true lover of music, and I appreciate that. You know, you don't get stuck in one thing. And I feel that, especially for almost anyone I've ever talked to who works behind the bar, there's that creativity that, you know, once you want to explore other things. So you're exploring other tastes, you're exploring other styles.
Totally.
In beverage or music. So of course you listen to everything. So lazy day at home.
Lazy day at home. It's like my iTunes is on shuffle and it's like Keith Urban to Bring Me the Horizon to Code Orange to like Hatebreed.
And you love it all.
It works.
That's
and if
awesome.
I, if I'm like if it's like, oh, this is actually like too crazy, maybe I need to like tune it. Into like one thing that it's like, it could be.
But most of the time it's just fine.
Yeah.
I know I have an old iPod player in my bathroom back when you could still kind of attach them. It's like the wide bottom iPod shuffle kind of thing.
Also have one.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I've got a bunch of music on there. And like once a year I'll throw new stuff on there and pull other stuff off. But it's had the same music on it mostly for a long time. Yeah. And stuff will pop up on shuffle and I'm like, oh yeah, I love that song. Oh, I forgot about that song, you know?
I had one of the like classic 160 gigabyte iPods.
Right.
So 160, it was like, you know, 20,000 songs-ish.
Right.
Which was hard to decide on the 20,000 songs for me because, I mean, now my iTunes library is in the realm of like 400,000 songs.
I have no idea how much is in mine.
Yeah.
I'm just like, there are months of music at least in there. I have no clue.
So for me, it was like I had this iPod, and we'd be when I was on tour. I'd be like younger when we were like a smaller band, and we were touring in our van and trailer. It was like I would just put it on shuffle because I wanted to see how long it would take me to listen to all 20,000 songs. So like the band's all sleeping, and I'm just like up there listening. Like it's like I would only skip it if it was like, all right, this is not like. I'm driving by myself. This is way too slow. I need to wake myself up. Or if it's like we're hanging out. We used to have these like the tour rules of like if like the ghost inside came on, like you woke up and you moshed in the van.
In the van.
Yeah, there's plenty of videos of all of us is like going nuts in the van, like diving over seats, like pushing people out of the way.
Oh my God.
And it was very much tied to like it had to be the ghost inside. If it was a different hardcore band, like maybe, but like if it was a ghost inside, you will jam
to any of those tracks.
Yeah.
It wasn't this particular track.
Didn't
it
matter
was just
what track.
Anytime. That's awesome. I love that. Well, what got you playing drums? What made you start?
I have ADD.
You wanted to
and
bang
my hands
on things.
Move a lot.
Yeah, and that was like you could focus that way.
Yeah.
Is that real, or is that just what you tell people?
No, that's real.
That's real.
It's like
That's awesome. I mean, I have a lot of things I tell people just because it's easier.
Totally. I mean,
but that's great.
Yeah. It's my feet and my hands
are always moving.
Always moving. My feet have been like, you know, tip of tap and beneath this table this whole time.
Oh yeah, I'm super fidgety, so I understand that.
Sorry, if you can like transfer that into actually like
something productive.
Yeah. Which is great for bartending. Your hands are like constantly moving, you're shaking, you're stirring, you're doing it all.
Well, let me ask you a drumming question then. Are there more jokes about drummers than there are about any other member of the band? Or does bass player get it more? What do you think? I hear them usually on drummers, but then I hear bass player a lot too.
I mean, having met so many different bands, I think there's unique things about every single like position of a band.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's more jokes about drummers. I think there's maybe like better jokes.
Who's your favorite drummer?
Ooh.
You can rattle off a couple. Just tell me what band, just in case
for
I don't know.
For pure nostalgia reasons, Travis Barker from like Blink-182.
Really?
Probably my favorite.
I'm a San
drummer.
Diego kid, so. But he's gone so many different directions, which I find really fascinating, you know? Because it started off with the whole Blink thing, but he's done so much more.
I mean, he started off in Aquabats.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Yeah.
I completely forgot he played in Aquabats.
Yeah.
That's so, like, wow. I feel like such a nerd because I should totally know that. My brother used to do animation for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, sweet.
Which is all in the same.
Yeah.
My brother played bass, like, in the early 90s in some of those kind of bands, too.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe you guys cross paths at that
maybe.
Point. So Travis Barker is one that you have... That's like
it's just like I mean like I listened to my Blink-182 albums until like that CD didn't even work anymore, kind of thing. There's just something like super nostalgic about like hearing his drumming.
Yeah.
Me.
Oh, so, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I you know, it's funny because I grew up having a crush on John Taylor from Duran Duran.
Yeah.
So I'm like super tied into bass players. Like I hear the bass more than anything else.
Yeah.
But because of that, when I was young, I would tune out other instruments.
Yeah.
So I learned how to isolate everything. And then my brother wound up playing bass, and I can't play anything. I noodled on guitar, but nothing really. But I can still hear all that stuff. But it's interesting because I think about drumming sometimes, but only if it really starts standing out to me, and it takes a lot, I think, for it to stand out to me. So I'm going to have to go back and listen and see how Travis sounds, because I never thought about it.
Yeah.
Just never thought about it. Anybody else that you should bring up that inspired you in the drumming
world? An old drummer in one of the bands I used to manage would kill me for not remembering his name, but the drummer from Paramore, I think, is one of the most talented drummers. And I think this because my old drummer, Brent, would, like, non-stop talk about him when we'd be touring. Like that was like that was the drummer to him.
This podcast,
and it's like,
he won't
I'm trying to
shit.
Sit here being like, fuck, Brent's gonna murder me if I don't remember this guy's name.
It's right. It's like I put you on a quiz show.
Yeah, I think to me it's like, I mean, he, like, their first album, when Paramore's first album came out, like, he was 15, and like,
are you kidding?
That
was he that young?
Like, so fucking good.
Wow, I didn't know he was that young. That's crazy. I know they were young, but shit, that's really young. Well, I guess when you were touring around in your bands, how old were you?
15.
See? So you
were
in.
I was not Paramore.
No, you weren't Paramore. But you know what? Paramore didn't know they were Paramore.
Paramore didn't know they were Paramore.
They became Paramore.
Yeah.
That always happens.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we should probably wrap it up a little bit because you've been. It's your day off.
It's my day off.
I shouldn't keep you here too long.
It was my day off. I came here to help fix an ice machine earlier today, and then I got reminded that it's inventory day. So
oh, no.
My day
so
off
that's not really
day
off.
But I'm going to dinner with Jen and Olivia from Campari later. We're going to go get some sushi, and then I come back here to Camp Bubbles. So.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. That sounds like a beautiful night. If I didn't have to go meet my boss, I would totally crash that party. But let's see. What I want to ask, what from you, what bands do you want people to be listening to right now? Because I always come into this, people are like, you know so much about music. I'm like, no, I don't. There's so much out there.
There is.
I always learn something. So you're telling me what I should be listening to right now.
Sure. I think that the Canadian music scene does not get enough recognition here in America.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, like, weird things. Like, Alexis on Fire, huge Canadian band, sells out stadiums in Canada.
Yeah.
Sells out stadiums in Europe and South America. No one knows who they are in America. Yeah. So my friends are in a band called Royal Tusk. It's ex-members of another band that people should hear. It's called 10 Second Epic. Great pop-punk band from Canada. Mm-hmm. But Royal Tusk, I think, is one of, like, the most hard-hitting rock bands right now.
Right now?
To
me. So Royal Tusk.
That would be up there. Dance Gavin Dance is a...
I know Dance Gavin Dance, actually.
Great. And Fever 333. Those are all bands I'm really feeling right now. All right,
cool.
And Noah Gunderson.
And what? Noah Gunderson.
Seattle guy.
Seattle guy.
Yeah.
All right, so let's tell people how they can find you if they want to find you, or how to find this bar. Obviously, it's Life on Mars Seattle on Instagram, right?
Life on Mars Seattle on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We're on the corner of Pike and Pine and Capitol Hill. You'll walk by us and you'll hear our music from down the block.
You'll hear it. You can see, actually, from the door, the wall of records.
You know you're getting close when you start smelling the waffle cones from Salt and Straw down the block.
You got a rainbow flag in the window.
Yeah.
You got a wall of records. Got waffle cones on the street. This is a very, very comfy neighborhood to be hanging in.
I agree.
So, So do you want people to find you or just find you here?
You can find me here. You can also find me at Barnacles on Sundays.
Okay.
I have my princess shift where I get to slang some Amaro, which is great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you very much, Craig.
Thank you for being here. Yeah.
And I look forward to having a drink later.
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect.
So a special thank you to Craig, who really schooled us there in the best way on being more positive and kind to people, on how not to tour in a van, maybe all the time. At least keep track of everybody. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of those band members. And let's give props to Canadian Booze. I gotta say, after we did this, he fixed me a Toronto, that drink he was talking about, and it was delicious. I'd never heard of it, so I was always grateful. I am always grateful to learn something new. He also put together a really great playlist for us, so head on over to the Shibimo Spotify page, which you can find a link to it over on the Mohurms Facebook page or the Podomatic Facebook, I'm sorry, the page for the podcast, you know. So if you go listen to that, you will learn even more about Craig and his wonderful tastes and overall fun and kindness. Get to Life on Mars in Seattle if you're ever up there. Tasty treats in both the drink and food world and amazing music. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SheBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.